Well, thanks, Will. I think this is, I mean, this whole idea of workplaces is just wonderful, and it's the place I've been working for some time. Just to give you a little background as we're unhooking and rehooking. Yeah, I got to hook this in. I was an entrepreneur for about 25 years. Before that, I was in research and academia. And for the last dozen years, I've been with Campus Crusade for Christ, and I'm currently a vice president engaged in the workplace and trying to help Campus Crusade engage in the workplace. So let me use two hands here for a second. See if my computer wakes up like it's supposed to. I think I see it happening. Oh, okay. Excuse me while I tell it there's another screen. Okay, there we go. I'd like to move into a specific area that that I happen to be working in and give you some examples. But some of the things that we've heard about the spiritual life, you know, we heard Della talk about it this morning, about being an insider and about having your whole life actually matter. We just heard the young lady talk about what her job is, and she sees it differently. And I know all of us basically in this room have a basic understanding of that, and some of the question is, how do we get it outside the room to other places? So that's some of the work that we're engaged in. And sort of two questions, and I'll look mostly at the second one. The first one that we're typically asking, this is a project of Campus Crusade for Christ. We're kicking it off. The question is, how do we continue to engage the 97% in the Great Commission? And I'll explain the 97 in a minute. And the next one is, how do we engage institutions? You know, how do we engage the company that I work in, the department of the government that I work in, the media outfit that I work with? You know, how do I get that to help us engage? And the assumptions that I'm making for today is that the sacred-secular divide that we've talked about has in fact created great damage, continues to create damage, and we're trying to figure out where's the hole in the dike that we can stick our fingers in to make a change. And that the workforce is an overwhelmingly large kingdom resource that's underutilized, dramatically underutilized, okay? We've got workers in the religion domain, and it turns out that less than 1% of the general population work as pastors or missionaries or imams or whatever, okay? But in the believing population, it's less than 3%, okay? So that's where I get my 97. So 97% of the people are working elsewhere. And this is the elsewhere part. We did a study in the United States. I don't have the exact figures in other places, but I suspect it's similar. I mean, this huge piece right here is the so-called business area or marketplace. You know, about half of the world works there. But education's always a big deal in certainly developed countries and in many developing countries. Families pretty large, government always, depending on the part of the, you know, it might be a larger piece. But the religion piece is a tiny piece, and so is the broadcast pieces, the media and the arts and entertainment. I mean, that's where information comes out of the regular society into the rest of it. So, you know, those are places that we like to work, and we're interested in working with leaders because we feel like that has the greatest impact. So what do we know in order to engage that? We know for movements everywhere, it requires abundant prayer. I mean, any study that you do on movements of God, there needs to be prayer. There needs to be prayer for cities. We've seen it in all the documents we've read. You actually need to have a whole city perspective. I mean, we talked about that. There was some discussion on urbanization. We all know it's happening. More than 50% of the world is there. It's going to 65 in not too long ahead of us. So there's an engagement that all of us need to have, and it needs to be of the whole city. The whole idea of the individual spirit-filled life, it's a key issue. And I think as you saw in the film, you know, the question is, why are you happy? Is this an opportunity? I mean, the way you answer that question, I mean, the way before you answer the question to the person, the way you know the kind of answer you're going to give is a Holy Spirit decision. Okay, it's, am I communicating with God, and is this the opportunity that somebody is saying, tell me about your Jesus, because I don't get it. Okay, so it's that kind of thing that's absolutely required. And there are leaders selected by God all over the place. My first recognition of that was Nebuchadnezzar. As I found out, he's called a servant of God. And when he's called a servant of God, he doesn't know he's a servant of God. Okay? I mean, he didn't even recognize who God was. So we know that God chooses all these people. Well, what do we not know? Well, the place that we're beginning to focus is the intentional role of the institutions. You know, we know from Hunter. Yes?
We're looking for Paul Bender Samuel.
Paul Bender Samuel? Okay. We know from James Davidson Hunter, we know from Dallas Willard, we know from some of our own observations of what happens in our society when culture moves and change. It takes institutional things. It takes laws, it takes norms of business behavior to anchor things. I mean, one of the sad things that we've seen anchored by Wall Street in the United States and affecting the whole world economy, I think, because the other business aspects carry the same global piece, is this quarterly profit stuff. Okay, every quarter it's got to increase. So we've got dysfunctional behaviors rooted. Well, we need to change. I mean, this idea of transformation that's been brought up this morning and yesterday, that stuff is the realm of institutions, okay? And then what is the critical mass? I mean, if you're actually going to make a change, I mean, you can make a change in some pieces. So I've got some examples that I'll go through. As we look at the whole city, we look at a lot of different aspects. I mean, prayer that I mentioned, there's leadership in the city. That's not whatever organization we're from, it's not always from us. Matter of fact, it's never always from us, okay? The whole city effective, well, that's a shorthand for Win, Build, Send and Campus Crusade. Okay, but the effective idea of evangelizing and proclamation and bringing up disciples and sending them out, you know, those kind of things are all necessary. There's a capacity requirement. So there's a usefulness in looking at the entire city. The place that I think is the focus, though, is back at the individual. We've heard that many times this morning. It's about the individual. It's about the believer. And the center of the believer's life is the spirit-filled life. So, I mean, a non-believer has to be brought to Christ before it can be spirit-filled. But as we're talking about a believer, there's a growing process. We look at the passage today, and we look at Lydia. You know, Lydia wasn't filled with the Spirit in the same sense, but she was attracted by God. And then she became a believer. We watch that happen in the passage. We know that she is going to grow. So she's discovering things from Paul. She's going to grow in them. She's going to tell others. She told her whole household. So, I mean, we got the initial part of that cycle going right in the passage. We take a look at the slave girl. All right? She has a lot less knowledge, probably, to begin with, than Lydia does. So all of us start on our journey in different places. But frankly, this is the kind of journey we go on. We all need to discover stuff. We need to improve and practice and grow in it. And we need to tell others. We need to engage them in what we know. And this cycle goes on for the rest of our lives. So that's the individual process that we look at. And in particular, we're looking at sort of training things. So, I mean, I don't know that I want to call this a best practice, but this is what we're doing, and I hope it's useful for you. On the individual side, you know, you got to know Christ. You have to have a spirit-filled life. You have to be able to lead somebody to Christ. You got to figure out what your calling is. I mean, the very things that we've talked about, everybody needs to do that. Then you get a little more serious then about what does a true follower really look like anyway? And you begin to ask some of these workplace questions. What does following Jesus in the workplace look like? What is fulfilling the Great Commission? How do I, you know, and as those, you know, as all of us have looked at that Matthew 28 passage and looked at go into the world, you know, if you look a little more carefully, at least my understanding, and I'm a business guy, okay, so I'm not a scholar, but my understanding is it's as you're going, okay? So in the midst of our life, and in the passage that we looked at today, Paul was going to a place of prayer when this other stuff happened, okay? And he found Lydia, and they got in a conversation. And then the next part of the passage was one day they were walking, you know, and they found a slave girl. So, I mean, that's how God wants us to work. So you know, what does fulfilling the Great Commission look like? And you got to get a little deeper and understand that. Understanding what movements are. What's a movement of God? How do I participate? How do I get ready? So there's learning and discovery that goes on at this level. And then you begin to get into what kind of impact. I mean, that's the place that's of our greatest interest right now in the city's project. Identifying and removing the secular divide. I mean, to me, it's very much like the prejudice issue. Whether it's ethnic prejudice or whether it's male-female prejudice. I mean, I know when I first got on some of the global leadership team we had at Campus Crusade, and there were two ladies on the team, okay? And we would say things. I mean, first of all, we honored the women. We liked the women there. We thought women should be in leadership. I mean, all of this stuff mentally is all just fine. In the heart, it's just fine. But out of my worldview comes comments that the women take offense at. And you think, and all of a sudden there's silence in the room. You know, we're not in the room. Okay, the guys are all talking. The women are not talking, right? And you think, what happened? Did we say something? You know? And the answer is yes, you did. Okay? So, but that's what's going on with the sacred secular divide. I mean, half of the people don't know that they are teaching other people about this higher calling that doesn't exist. You know, so I mean, it's how do you break that down? What do you do with that? And God's view of work that I think was explained well today. That explanation needs to get out to lots of places. The whole theology of a city. Dominion, what does it look like? What does stewarding look like? So, I mean, these are harder questions that more mature believers need to be asking, and we need to somehow be engaged with those people in the workplace. Here's a little picture. You know, the first thing was the integrated life journey. Well, if you take that little integrated life and you drop it into a pond, it makes a ripple. And different size drops make different size ripples. And for us, there's an immediate sphere of people. Then there's the institution that you're in, and then the next level out is the whole domain in the society, and then you reach the entire society. So, I mean, there's an ever-increasing place, and we'd love to get all the way out here, but frankly, we're just right now focused on the institution. And I don't know whether we have to focus here or not. You know, Will just talked about the transformation that occurred when the slave girl got changed. Well, Paul had no intention, I mean, I shouldn't say no intention, but Paul's primary intention was not to transform any of the economic piece, okay? It was about the devil and it was about her salvation, okay? I mean, that was the important issue, and the transformation followed, and God did that. You know, and I think that's very much the same in terms of what we should expect. I mean, I'd love to see transformation, but it really starts with the individual, it starts with their spiritual life, and it starts with their stewardship of the larger piece of influence that they have. So, so where is impact needed for this human flourishing? Any nation has a bunch of systems. They have legal systems, they have health systems, economic, transportation, housing, retail, government, you know, you name them. Those are the things that need to be transformed in every one of our nations. I mean, I don't know that there's an individual in this place from all the nations that we have where you can stand up and say, you know, I love the way my nation does all these things. Okay? So all of us are in need of that, and for human flourishing, getting rid of slavery, you know, reducing the amount of poverty, having health better. I mean, all of those things, I mean, God is honored by that, because it's closer to the design in the garden, you know? So Christians, especially leaders, must choose to act responsibly before God. All of us have been in the place that Will said. You know, here I am pumping gas in a place that's got prejudice showing. I could have acted and I didn't, right? Every one of us has those stories, every one of us, all the time. And how do we increase our own understanding of what we can do, what influence we have? Now, some of us have platform. We know we have some level of influence, but frankly, there's backroom influence of all the people around you that sometimes you don't even notice, okay? So we're asking the questions, what ought life to be like? What was God's design? What is my role? So I'm going to end with a few stories, and it'll help me if I look at my notes to not forget all the pieces of the stories. A couple stories, one from Malawi and one from Egypt, on the court systems. We've got a guy who is discipling a lady in Malawi who happens to be the Chief Justice. And as all of us know, our journeys are long. So he's been working with her for some time. And at one day, she realized this was about God. I mean, as a servant of God, the very decisions I make in this legal system are about God. So it was just like all of a sudden, do you mean that I'm administering justice in my country for Jesus Christ? You know, I mean, it just makes all the difference in the world when you realize that your actions are about the kingdom. All your actions, all your decisions. Well, now she's mentoring a lot of younger judges, justices, lawyers. So she's going out and doing that. That's the thing that she's begun to do. In Egypt, we were doing some training on this leader-led movement piece that I've been in charge of for some years. And there was a lawyer there. And he got excited. And he thought, gee, you know, I ought to do something. Well, nobody told him. I mean, that's one of the nice things about leaders. You don't have to tell them everything they have to do. So he went back to his town in Minya. He pulled together 150 lawyers. And the subject was, can you be a lawyer and be a Christian? Okay? That was the subject. And they began discussing this. Now, 20 of the people who came actually accepted Christ that night. You know, I mean, you get amazing stuff happening. And now these guys are meeting regularly to try to figure out what to do about their legal system. So you begin to do that. So these things are possible, and that's why I'm trying to just provide some hope. I mean, hope for myself as well as you, okay, because I need it too. Multi-country, economics of mutuality. There's an interesting story of M&M Mars Company, which actually is located in my hometown in McLean, Virginia. And they're a huge company that's been around for decades. And they're the largest rice producer in the world, as well as a huge candy producer. And when Wall Street fell in October of 2008, many of us lost a third to a quarter or to 40% of our portfolio, and it impacted everybody. And they began asking, we want to grow as a company. What does it take? And the assumption in the current model is that it takes increased profits. Okay, I make more profits, I grow, right? That's how it works. That's Wall Street. Well, they did some correlation studies and realized that was not true. It's actually a lie, okay? And they thought, ooh, wonder what is correlated. And they did some more study and they found out three things, a triple bottom line that all of us in our world are actually quite understanding. And it was profit, of course, people, and the planet. They tried to keep it memorable in English, okay? So you've got a triple bottom line. Well, the nice thing about this is that this was started by a number of Christians interested in influence a corporation. They've done a serious study. People from McKinsey and Oxford Analytica and IBM Yorktown Heights and a bunch of other places have been engaged in this very serious piece. And what they've now done is that they're starting a program at Oxford to put this stuff into the business school to begin teaching it. Well, that's a step towards transformation of an economic system which is a part of capitalism, which has gone awry, okay? I mean, you know, Della mentioned this morning that capitalism is not about people anymore. Well, it's not that capitalism doesn't have to be about people, it's that the way we're doing capitalism now is not about people. So there are changes that can be made. The last one I'll tell you about is in Colombia. The president of Colombia, Dr. Juan Manuel Santos, and a friend of his who is a senator and president of the National Savings Bank, Dr. Ricardo Arias Mora, have been working together. And they have recognized the housing problem in Colombia and the people can't afford things, so they decided to institute a savings program. So they go from city to city, and they set up, like in a big gymnasium or something like that, they set up a little city. I mean, when you come into this thing, 30 to 40,000 people come into this on a given weekend. It's a three-day event. And they teach people how to save. They teach people how to do finances. It's all biblically based teaching, okay? And they have, over 2 years, people have saved, 2.5 million people have saved an additional $3.5 billion, okay? That's $1,400 a person. So, I mean, it's not, on the one hand, a large amount of money on a per-person basis for those of us who travel around the world a lot, but it's a huge amount of money in a whole society, okay? So there, the interesting and exciting part of that is, given the success of that particular program, they've got four more pieces that they wanted to work on. One of them's agriculture, one of them's social justice, one of them's education, and the last one is God's intervention in personal and national, okay? God's intervention in the nation and in individual lives. So, I mean, they are relying then on the value of this stuff to the people, to the nation, to the common grace, if you will. But they are getting ready to insert directly the idea of what, how God is interested in all of us. So, I just give you those examples to indicate that there's opportunity for transformation. It does start at the individual level, and I mean, I'm hoping that over the course of the next 2 days, we can begin to talk about how do we do that, okay? I mean, we've got an educational problem with our churches and our pastors, but we also have how do we actually do it in the workplace. So the questions I'm asking myself is, what does it take to increase the scope of impact, and how do we get to critical mass? But I mean, we don't all have to. I mean, that's what I'm asking. To just switch over, because I'm actually 3 or 4 minutes over what I'm supposed to be, is these are the themes on the workplace side that we came up with in the discussion. And I just wanted to put them up there and turn it over to you, Willie.